This is Edith Millman interviewing Mr. Raoul Hermelin. Today is April 26, 1992. Mr. Hermelin, could you tell me when and where you were born and a little bit about your background?
Yes, I was born in Borislav, Poland, on the 11th of September 1924. I am the only son. My mother's family was quite large and they were living in Borislav. My father's family and my father come from Brody, close to the border in Poland, but close to the border of Russia. I had a very pleasant youth and reasonably good education due to the fact that my father was a doctor in the city, and also because I was the only son, I was the darling of the whole family. My schooling in primary school was in Borislav. Later on in high school, that is gymnasium, also in Borislav, until I was 15 years old, when on the 1st of September 1939 the war broke out.
Could you tell me a little bit about life in Borislav before 1939? Specifically, could you tell me about any anti-Semitism that you might have encountered?
Yes, well, our city was equally divided between Ukrainians, Poles and Jews. The city's population was about 45,000 people, and there were about approximately 15,000 of each nationality. Due to the reasonably good economic conditions in our city, because we had about 2,500 oil wells, the workers were reasonably well off. Consequently, there was not as much anti-Semitism as it was in the other parts of Poland. Of course, there were sections of Jewish populations that was very, very poor, as well as in other populations, but I think perhaps in Jewish population the percentage of the poor was bigger than in others. There was not much between the population, the Ukrainians and the Poles tolerated to a certain degree Jews, and in my opinion the Poles, because of the church influence and because of their own nature, were perhaps more anti-Semitic than the Ukrainians. But generally the people were living together in peace and harmony, which was also the result of the fact that Borislav belonged previously to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and there was reasonable freedom of all nations there.
Okay, could you tell me a little bit about your religious upbringing? Was your family Orthodox or Zionist? Or could you tell me a little bit about the religious affiliation of your family and of most of the Jews in Borislav?
Most of the Jews in Borislav were religious and conservative. First of all, my mother's family, my grandfather and grandmother, they were not Orthodox Jews, but they were religious Jews. My grandfather founded the biggest synagogue in Borislav, and he was quite a wealthy man before the war, and all mother's sisters and brothers were also religious. Both my grandparents on my mother's side and in our home there was a religious kosher home. On my father's side of the family they were even more religious. My father comes from Brody, as I told you before, and he had two uncles. One of them emigrated to America immediately after the First World War. The other one was a printer and a scholar. He was printing Bibles, and the same as he had the commentary in the Bible, Mr. Rashi, he was having his own commentaries. We had the Bible until the war. In the middle of the war, the Bible somehow disappeared, and I don't have it again. When it comes to myself, I was brought up in a religious home. I'm not very religious and not Orthodox at all. My Jewish education was every day for 2 hours in the afternoon in the Hebrew school, and also every day I had the rabbi who was teaching me Yiddish. That rabbi was the son of the head rabbi of the synagogue my grandfather founded. He was an extremely clever man, extremely intelligent, and apart from teaching me Yiddish, he was also introducing me to Jewish life, taking me to Jewish films, for instance, the book, and being a modern rabbi, he was also caring for my general education as well.
Could you tell me what language was spoken in your house?
Well, my parents spoke either Polish or Yiddish between them. I spoke with my father and mother only Polish.
So you had to have the tutor, the son of the rabbi, teach you Yiddish, or do you mean Hebrew?
Yiddish. Hebrew I was learning in a Hebrew school.
The rest of your education was in public school. You went to a public
we
school.
We had the primary school was a public school. The gymnasium or high school was a coeducational gymnasium, which was semi-private. We had to pay for our education. And because the high school was founded partly by a Jewish philanthropist, a certain amount of teachers were Jewish too. I had excellent schooling there because we had, for some reason, we had excellent staff, and my basic education was excellent due to those teachers.
Did you find anti-Semitism in the school?
To a lesser degree, yes, mainly from Poles. Who were from sometimes for fun kicking or hitting a Jew, but generally the atmosphere was quite friendly.
You said your father was a doctor in Boryslav. Did he treat Jews and non-Jews, or did mostly Jews come to him?
No, he treated Jews and non-Jews. My father was working for Casa Chore, which later on was renamed Polyclinic, and we had in our city a specific system. The oil companies that were in our city were mainly overseas oil companies. The biggest one was the French one, and they provided for their workers health insurance and education, which covered their health and their medicines. They provided free housing, free electricity and heating, and free education for their children. That means that they were paying for education of their children. In addition to that, my father had a private practice where he treated everybody, Jews and non-Jews.
Could you tell me about a Zionist movement, if there were any Zionist movements in Boryslav?
Yes, there were many. There were many organizations who competed with each other. There was the Shomer HaTzair, there was Akiba, there were many, many other organizations. There was a Jewish sports club, Kadima. There were religious organizations like Bnei Akiva and so on, and Beit Yaakov. And the Jews were very active in their social life.
Did you belong to any Zionist organization?
Well, more or less, because I was introduced to Akiba for one and only reason, because they had a good table tennis table. Then later on, I joined the Jewish club Kadima, which was perhaps the backbone of the Jewish Zionist movement. And that was until the war broke out.
In general, would you say that your upbringing before the war was an upper middle class, middle class upbringing?
I think middle class would be the answer. We had, that is, my mother and father had no financial worries, because in addition to my father earning very good wages at the polyclinic and having a very good practice, private practice, we also had four oil wells, that three were fully owned by my parents, and one was in company with a certain Mr. Landau, whose wife survived the war and is in Tel Aviv now. But because my grandfather on my mother's side lost everything during the Depression, and because my father's parents were poor, my father was supporting not only our family, but was supporting the two other families, helping them financially in any way he could.
Could you tell me what the situation was in Boryspil just prior to September 1st, 1939, and the first days of the war?
Everybody knew that the war is approaching. There was a general tension in the air. Prior to, already a year or two before the war, we had first inklings. First of all, the Hitler's invasion of Austria or Anschluss. People came from, ran away from Austria, and one of those was my cousin, who came and who stayed with us, and he was telling us horrible stories, and we listened to them, and somehow it did not make any impression on us. It's always like that, but it happens to somebody else and not to you personally. Then there were in western part of Poland, there was a place where they kept the German Jews who ran away from Germany at the time, also telling everybody terrible stories, and they were widely published, in, particularly in a Jewish paper which came from Lviv. That was Chwila, and we all knew about it, and somehow again the general apathy between the Jews was there, and nobody was paying any attention. Everybody was living their normal lives. From time to time you heard about young people going to then Palestine, and that was all. I was with my father on the summer vacation in Strzebnica, in western part of Poland, and already then they were building ditches, anti-tank ditches, and everybody was talking quite openly about the approaching war. I came back from that holiday only a week before it started, and the beginning of the war I remember very vividly. I was at my friend's place. His name was Karol Bander, and he later perished at the Janowska camp in Lviv. And the sky was blue, there was a beautiful summer weather, and suddenly we heard a roar of the plains, and well, of course, before we learned about gas masks and all kinds of things, and but we didn't have any gas masks, so everybody ran and grabbed a little bit of soil and put it in a handkerchief and covered their faces, but nothing happened. The plane just passed overhead, and then we had the speech on the radio of the Polish Foreign Minister Beck, who announced that there is a war between Germany and Poland, the Germans crossed, and so on.
Could you describe the first few days of the war?
Well, the war didn't last long. There was only one bomb dropped on our city, which fell in the field, not hurting anybody, and the pieces of bomb embedded in the telegraph pole. Everybody was going there to look at it. Within a very short time, less than 2 weeks, the Germans were in our place. The first German troops arrived on bikes, and there was no Polish resistance. There were a few shots fired here and there, but the Poles simply disappeared. And we were, of course, very much afraid what's going to happen. We expected a pogrom or something to happen, but nothing happened. And I remember being in a synagogue on a Day of Atonement, when somebody ran into synagogue and said that the Russians are on the outskirts of the town. We all went there, and there were rows and rows of Russian tanks with the radio station, with a peculiar smell of their petrol. And the next day, the Russians came in, being greeted by everybody, but especially by the Jews, for whom the Russians were their salvation.
Could you tell me if the Ukrainian population greeted first the Germans and then the Russians? What was the attitude?
The Ukrainians greeted only the Germans. The reason for it was that Hitler promised them a Ukrainian state, and they were both anti-Jewish and pro-Germans.
How about the Poles?
No, the Poles stayed on the outside. They greeted neither the Germans nor the Russians.
Was there an increase of anti-Semitic incidents during the war and just after the first days of occupation?
That happened only after the beginning of the Russian-German war. Prior to that, a lot of Jews, of course, were pro-Russian, because the idea of communism, not the practice, promised them something which they didn't have before, promised them equality, promised them the possibility of an equal life, both an education and a beginning and getting work, because during the Polish rule, Jews could not study, only very few of them, and even those who did study were greeted by Polish gangs of youth who were beating them up.
You mean at the university?
University. And the Jews had to stand at the back of the hall. They were discriminated against. And even those who gained a degree could not get jobs during the Polish rule. So a lot of parents, and mine too, either intended or did send their young people overseas to study, either to Czechoslovakia, which was more liberal, or to Italy, who had good universities, and despite the fascist rule, they were not so much anti-Jewish.
Could you tell me how long did the Germans stay in Borisov before the Russians came?
About a week.
And there were no major pogroms?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Now, could you tell me about life under the Russians?
Life under the Russians economically was difficult because although they promised and they did give everybody work, the supply of goods was inconsistent, and we simply were getting whatever we could. In addition to that, a lot of Jews especially, but other population too, were beginning to work with the Russian secret police. And people who were in any case, in any way connected with authorities or with the police, were slowly being deported to Siberia. That also...
You mean people who worked for the Russian secret police were deported to
no,
Siberia?
No, 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 no. People who worked with the Russian secret police denounced certain people to them.
Denouncing.
And yes. Usually it happened during the night where about 200 or 300 people suddenly disappeared from their homes. They were loaded into the rail wagons and deported to Siberia. Also affected were people, Jewish people mainly, who had the members of their families in the Polish army in any way, because they were considered suspicious. And they were either deported to Siberia or resettled in other cities.
Was there an influx of Jewish people from the western part of Poland?
Yes, yes, quite a big one. We had a lot of, especially intelligentsia and educated people, as well as anybody else who could run away from western Poland, came then to our city. It enriched our cultural life because we got some excellent teachers and tutors. For instance, one doctor of mathematics from Krakow who was an excellent teacher. Also the Russian educational system was very good because it gave students the possibility not only to learn and study, but it was done in such a way that it was made pleasant. We also had several circles, like mathematical circle, geographical circle, photographic circle, and so on, in the afternoons, where we received special tuition in certain subjects.
So the schooling system continued uninterrupted. You continued to go to school.
That's right. We continued to go to the Russian school immediately. We had to learn Russian, which we did, but it was easier for us because in our primary school we had to have the language which was called Ruski, which is nothing to do with the Russian language, but it was perhaps very similar to Ukrainian language. That's why we could learn Russian more easily.
So, but the language of instruction before the war was Polish.
Polish, yes.
And you had to learn Ruski?
Ruski, which was because this part of Poland, northern Romania and part of Hungary formed all that region that of people, and they used to be called Rusini, not Ukrainians, not Russians, but Rusini. And this is, they still remain in that form.
And you had to...
We had to learn officially the same as Polish language. And we had marks out of that.
How about your religious education during the Russian occupation?
Well, the Russians, first of all, mounted the propaganda against religion altogether, any religion. I still received my education from the rabbi, that is the Yiddish education. But the Hebrew education was finished because the Russian forbid it.
Now, could you tell me about the life when the war between Russia and Germany started?
Well, the war started on the 22nd of June 1941. It was the end of our school year, and there was a dance at school when suddenly the German planes appeared. And we all ran home. We didn't know what happened. The next day there was a Stalin's speech announcing the beginning of the war. The funny part about it all is that the night before the war broke out, the oil transports from our city went to Germany according to German-Russian agreement. The Russians were completely unprepared for it.
How long did the war last in your area? How soon after the outbreak of the war did the Germans occupy Russia?
Approximately a week after the beginning of the war, the Germans came to our city. This time they were loudly greeted by Ukrainians and also by some Poles. And the next day they found bodies of prisoners in the Russian secret police cellar. They were bound by wire, and the following night the first pogrom started.
What prisoners were there? What nationalities?
All nationalities, Poles, Ukrainians, all nationalities.
But who imprisoned them?
Russians, the Russian secret police, yes. And so the first pogrom started, and it was terrifying. People were dragged out of their homes, chased and beaten, and they had to go through the row of Germans and Poles, Ukrainians, who were beating them on the way, and then they were placed in the same cellar of the Russian secret police as the ones who could make it, because about 200 of them were beaten to death on the way to the cellars.
Who was doing the beating?
Poles, Ukrainians, and some Germans, but very few Germans, only mainly the local population.
Was this an act of revenge for the people that had been found in there?
Yes, that was a combination of act of revenge and the anti-Semitic feeling, which was to some degree hidden, and then it came out. It was also, I think, jealousy, because they wanted to get Jewish things and for nothing. So. It was a mixture of all those three feelings.
Do you think it was also because of possible greater cooperation between the Jews and Russians during the Russian occupation?
Yes, well, the cooperation perhaps was not as strong as the Poles and the Ukrainians implied, because there were quite a few people within the Polish and Ukrainian population who cooperated with the Russians. But the Jews were blamed for everything. Don't forget that a lot of Jews who were real communists, and they were imprisoned by the Poles prior to Russians coming, they came out of jails and a concentration camp, which was a camp made by Poles long time prior to the Second World War.
Do you know where
Bereza Kartuska, and the place Bereza Kartuska. And those Jews, of course, looked for revenge.
Where was that camp, Bereza Kartuska?
I don't know, I only know the name.
But it was in Poland. Do you know if it was
And as far as I know, the concentration camp in Bereza Kartuska was established even prior to Hitler coming to power.
Oh, you mean in Poland.
In Poland, prior to Hitler coming to power in Germany.
And mostly communists were held there, or were criminals? Or
no criminals. It was a political camp, and I would say the biggest part of prisoners were Jews.
Was it because there so many Jews were communists, or was it just because of general anti-Semitism and suspicion of communism?
Well, one and the other. Jews were communists because they were underprivileged during the Polish rule. They thought that the idea will give them some equality in life, and that was the solution of the Jewish youth, because there was lack of education, lack of employment, and there were a very big part of Jewish population, despite claims by others, were very, very poor.
Now, could you describe we are continuing the interview with Mr. Raoul Hamelin. This is tape one, side B. Could you describe your life under the German occupation?
Well, I will start with the first pogrom. Not far from our place was living a petty criminal with his wife. Very, very poor.
Was he a Jew?
No, a Pole. And my mother was good to him, sometimes giving him some food or some clothing. And when the pogrom started, my mother went to him and told him that, you know, that we know each other so well and so on, that he should be kind to us. Then we were hiding in the attic end of the house.
In whose house?
In our own house. He really helped us then, because he was the leader for the district to drag out the Jews. And he protected us that nobody came and took us out.
You say he was a petty criminal before the war?
Before the war in Poland, during the Polish times. So after the pogrom has finished, because to German efficiency, the pogrom was a 24-hour one, and when after the 24 hours passed, the pogrom stopped immediately.
When was the pogrom in relation to the occupation? How many days after the...
Second day after the Germans came. Then the Germans and the city authorities started their persecution of the Jews. First of all, we had to wear armbands at all times.
What color were they?
White with blue Magen David. We had to register for work. We had to register all together to get food rations. Already then, hunger started. We were picked up individually or by Judenrat to go and work and regulate rivers and do all kinds of manual labor. And during that labor, we were beaten continuously. And the situation was becoming worse and worse. At a certain time, we had to. We had to register again, and each of us has, is on top of the armband, of the top of the Jewish armband, they had to be, each of us received a number. My number was 10-26-69. I still have the documents to prove that. I still have the Arbeitskarte which shows my profession and so on.
Who organized the labor battalions?
The labor battalions were organized by the Judenrat, who was requested by the Germans to do so.
Who belonged to the Judenrat?
Various people, usually intelligentsia, who
did the Germans appoint them, or were they selected by
they
the
were,
Jews?
They were selected by the Jews, or they selected themselves because there was no selection. And later on, they were responsible for supplying labor and for distribution of food and everything else by the Germans.
Was a ghetto established in Boris?
Not for a long time. We were living in our own quarters. Borislav had a special treatment because of the oil well situations all over the place, and because a lot of Jews were specialists in that field. It was not feasible for the Germans to do so. We were living there until the first action started, that was in November 1941, where about 1,500 Jews were caught and executed.
What do you mean, caught and
executed? Caught.
And
executed.
Where were they executed?
On the outskirts of town, and they had to dig their own graves, and they were shot usually two or three with one bullet, and then covered and covered with lime.
Were these people specially selected, or
no,
were they caught in the streets?
They were caught in the streets at random. To some degree, the workers who had already the number were treated sympathetically. That is, they in some cases they would be released, but any other Jews, old or children or whoever else. It did not matter whom they caught, and they were shot on the outskirts of the town, and that was a 24-hour action.
That you say that was in November of 1941.
41. Then we had the second action in 1942, beginning of 1942. Again, 600 Jews were caught and killed, again on the outskirts of the town.
But at that time, the Jews didn't live in a special ghetto.
No, they lived all over the place. but also at that time hunger started, hunger and typhoid fever. My father, being a doctor, also caught it, and the situation was tragic because the Germans were succeeding in the war with Russia, and there was simply no hope in sight for us except who and when is going to die. Then the most terrible action of all came in August 1942. It was the third action. We already knew about it coming because it was already in other towns, and we received telephone information that it's coming towards us. The action was conducted by special German Vernichtungskommando under General Katzmann.
General who?
Katzmann.
K?
Katzmann. K-A-T-Z-M-A-N. Who was a crazy man, small, red-haired, crazy man, whom I saw when I was passing already in the truck when they were taking me. He was all the time screaming and behaving like a lunatic. But
you mentioned in the truck when you were taking,
I have to explain all that from the very beginning. We knew that the action is coming, and everybody tried to find a hiding place. I was working in Fanto. This is Fanto, F-A-N-T-O. There were repair shops, metal repair shops. We were repairing machines, pumps, motors, and so on.
For the Germans?
For the Germans, of course. For the local industry, mainly. They were established before the war, during Polish times.
Was it under German administration?
Yes, everything was under German administration. And they were, I think, seven of us doing manual labor there. We were bringing coal from the railway station in 5-ton trucks. Four of us had to go load up the truck and came to unload the truck. We were helping to put the big engines in their proper place for servicing, generally doing the manual labor. Because of nobody knew where is the safe place. I was there, and my mother and father were hiding in the radiology room at the polyclinic, who one of the workers closed using his key, and they were hidden there.
Was this a Jewish worker or a Polish worker?
No, the one who closed was Polish worker.
And did he know that your parents were?
He was my father's patient. Anyway, the action consisted of two parts. The action started on the 5th of August 1942, and about 3,000 people were assembled at the railway station a day and a half later. About 200 of them went to a camp at the Ulica Janowska in Lwów. About 200 were released still for the work in the local industry. The rest was loaded in rail cars, approximately 100 to a rail car. Children, women, men, doesn't matter who it was, together, and taken directly to Belzec and murdered there. We thought that was the end, but they were taken away in the morning, but in the afternoon, about lunchtime, the action started again. This was when we were taken from our workplace. Somebody denounced us, and we were taken from our workplace in a truck.
What do you mean, somebody denounced?
One of the workers in the plant denounced that there are Jews there. And so we were taken in a truck to Assembly Point, which was in Kino Grażyna, in our city. and
Grażyna.
Grażyna is the name.
GRA,
yes.
A movie house,
yes. And I was one of the first who came there. Then they brought, because we were still not out, we were still outside, not inside the hall, they brought another group of women. One of them was carrying a tiny baby, and one of the Vernichtungskommando men grabbed the baby by the leg and smashed his head against the wall.
You saw that?
I saw that, yes. I don't know who the woman was, I don't know the name. So later on they put us inside, and they were bringing people in. You don't know the names, but a funny thing happened to me then, because they brought in a lady who was both a relative and my mother's best friend, and before the war, about 2 years before the war, she sent her son away to Australia. Her name was Rappaport. They had a business in our city of machine parts, and her name was Shivka. She came in, they took them from their workplace, which was the office of an oil company, and I still had with me a piece of bread and a cucumber, which I gave her because she was hungry. And we started to talk, and she said to me, "If you survive the war, please remember, tell my son to take revenge for me." So I said to her, "Are you crazy? We're all going to die here. This is the end." She said, "No, you'll survive the war. Remember to tell Milek to take revenge for me." Anyway, they started to bring more and more people in. The place was coming more than full. They were using police dogs and butts of their guns to hit us and to chase us into one corner.
They were all Germans who were doing it?
No, that was Germans in combination with the Ukrainian police. One of the police was a man named Babiak, who was my school friend, a Ukrainian. My mother, prior to the action, my mother gave me a string of pearls just in case I may have to bribe my way out. And he took that away from me, and he beat me up with the butt of the rifle. And there were no toilet facilities, of course, there, so all people had to do on the floor. We were simply swimming in it. And then at one stage, the young girls apparently went crazy. She started to scream, and she was the daughter of her name was Malach, and she was the daughter of a man who had the scrap iron business in our city. They shot her through the head, and they asked for two people to take her body out. I have been trying to escape whenever I volunteered to take the body out. I thought perhaps being outside I may be able to run away. But the girl was still alive, and the blood was oozing out of her head, perhaps from the artery near the head, and it was like a fountain. I was completely covered in blood. Anyway, we took her out, and when we took her out, they shot her again, and they shot her dead. But I had no chance to escape at all, and they brought me back in. Then the following day, they took us, all of us, to the station. There were about 2,500 people. And again, there was a selection on the station. The director of the oil company, who was to some degree sympathetic to the Jews, whose name is Beitz, and he was later a very big figure in Germany, a director of Krupp Works and also the first man to introduce business relations between Germany, West Germany and Russia.
His name was Beitz.
Beitz.
Was he a German that came from Germany or somebody that...
No. He was a German who came from Germany, apparently a nephew of governor of Poland, Frank. He was a very young man. He looked like a film actor. He dressed extremely nice, and so his wife was very beautiful. And
he was a civilian?
He was a civilian in charge of the oil industry in Poland. And
in
our city in Borislav, that was the only city that, apart from small quantities in the west, Borislav was the main producer of oil. And at one stage he arrived at the station and started to greet the Germans who were there and who were segregating the Jews. Somehow I and a friend of mine who is now in Israel, because their attention was diverted there, and despite the fact that we were guarded by police dogs and machine guns and everything else, the two of us ran away. The rest...
You mentioned that he was a little sympathetic to the Jews.
He was helping right through the German occupation. He was helping the Jews. In that respect, for instance, he knew in advance when the action is coming. So, before the fourth action started, he assembled all the Jews in his office and told them not to move from there. But the Reiterzug Polizei, which is the mounted police, came when he was asleep and took all the Jews in the fourth action out of the place of work. But generally he was sympathetic towards Jews. He was rewarded after the war for his sympathetic work for the Jews.
By whom?
By the Jews, several Jews, and also they even wanted to put his name as a righteous Jew in the righteous Gentile in Jerusalem. But coming back to the action, the rest of was taken again to either Belzec or the work or the Janowska camp in Lwów. And within those 3 days, we lost 5,500 Jews from our population. It was a terrible blow to everybody, because everybody was affected to one degree or another. And at the same time, there was hunger. There were dozens of people dying in the streets. People with swollen legs from hunger, people with open wounds and worms on those wounds, people crying and begging, because the death caused by starvation is a terrible death and causes a lot of pain. And beatings and everything else continues.
There was still no ghetto, or was this in...
There was still no ghetto.
So there were non-Jews mixed in
together. Yes. Then... just to continue the story, the fourth action came again in end of October, beginning of November 1942. Again at that time the assembly point was a cinema or a theater, this time Colosseum, and they assembled about 1,500 people there. At that time I was hidden again by one of my father's patients, who was married to a Jewess, and she was also hidden. He hid me under the roof of a factory where he was the manager, and I was not supposed to move at all, because not so that the people underneath me didn't know that there is somebody there, and so I didn't move. They took the 1,500 people immediately to Belzec, and they were destroyed there. When I came out of this hiding, he called me and he asked me how old I am, and I said, "Well, I'm 18. So he said, "Well, you must act as if you were a grown man, because your father was taken in this action." for some reason, they, out of those 1,500 people that they took to the station, at the station, they released all the Jewish doctors. So my father was still alive, and we were still intact.
How many doctors were there, do you remember?
Approximately a dozen. I can't tell you the exact figure. I remember a lot of their names, but not all of them.
Well, just before the action, or before these actions, was your were your parents hiding somewhere, or did they still live in the apartment?
No, my father was working. They took him from the place of work. My mother was hiding. Everybody was trying to hide anywhere they could. It was just a chance that you could be hidden, so the Germans and the locals couldn't find you, because there was, during the action, there was not only the action by the German police and Ukrainians and the Reiterzug Polizei. They were both during all the actions. They were very actively helped by the Polish and Ukrainian population, by their young people, hoodlums, and just young people, and generally the population, who delighted in showing the Germans where the Jews live or where they can hide, or if they were hidden where they are. And only because of the very big cooperation of the local population, they could have such a success. In our city, we had apart from the helpers and population, we had quite another form. We had Schutzpolizei, which was mainly, not mainly, but all Austrians. Only the commandant of the Schutzpolizei was a German from Hamburg.
Do you remember his name by any chance?
I know his name, but at the moment it just doesn't come to me at the moment. We had the Schutzpolizei consisted of Austrians who were the most terrible, the most sadistic people I know. In addition to that, we had Reiterzug Polizei, which is the mounted police, which consisted of all Austrians. Young boys who were sadistic to an incredible degree, and we had the Kriminalpolizei, in which some Poles and Ukrainians worked, but which consisted of Germans, and we had the Jewish Ordnungsdienst from appointed by Judenrat, We simply were hunted like dogs. We didn't know what to do and where to hide and whom to trust. The situation was absolutely catastrophic. And so I come now to the fifth action, which was in December 1942. That action was mainly for Jewish old people, Jewish women and children. That action lasted 5 weeks. My mother was hiding at the Ukrainian's place, where he was keeping his utensils. She was standing up in a small wardrobe all the time and let out at night for a short time. And all those 5 weeks he was there.
Was this Ukrainian, was he being paid for hiding her? Or
no, that was my father's patient. He hit my mother for nothing. At that time, my auntie, that is my mother's youngest sister, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, were taken by the Germans, and all those people were taken to the cellars of Ukrainian police. The Ukrainian police was commanded by Ukrainian by the name of Peretz, who was later on, after the war finished, found and executed in Poland, and by an Austrian man. He was the overall commandant. He had an aversion to old people. At that time, men could travel quite often, nothing happened to them. I took my mother's fare and I took it to him and asked him to release my auntie and my grandmother. He released my auntie, but he said to me, "Die Alte muss sterben."
The old one
has to die. So my father got hold of some poison. I took the poison to my grandmother and she knew that she has to die. And she then said to me, yes, my son, one mother can bring up 10 children, but 10 children can't save one mother. The unfortunate part
of it... Was this your mother's mother?
My mother's mother. The unfortunate part of it was that she gave part of the poison to another lady there. Consequently, her death was not immediate. She was dying for one day before she died. And then they released the body to me and my uncle. And we took the body, we carried the body to the Jewish cemetery. We buried my grandmother, and with the penknife I inscribed her name and the date of death on the tree that was standing nearby. After the Russians came again in 1944, we put a monument to my grandmother there. Then all the people that were there at the Fifth Action, all the women and children, were taken and shot on the outskirts of the town. In February 1943, there was another action. That action was on the 15th of February 1943. It was because of the German loss in Stalingrad. That was a so-called revenge action for Stalingrad. Again, they took at random 600 Jews and they shot them on the outskirts of the town. The place was called Dole, which means graves or holes.
Where were they buried? Right at the outskirts of
That's
the
right,
town.
Yes. And that was the sixth action. Then they were, after the sixth action started so-called liquidation actions, 7, 8, 9, 10 and so forth, where every Jew caught was shot on the spot by anybody who was there. And then that's
what... you mean, was called to report someone?
Well, we had several sections of Jews. Those Jews that were working were to some degree protected. Apart from the armbands with the number which we had and the documents that we are working, we also had a little letter R on a cloth, which we had to wear in front of on our chest. That letter specified that we are in the Rüstung industry, which means the industry necessary for war effort. And those Jews, if they were caught, were released because of that. I was one of those, and at the same time, because excuse me, because of the fact that we had to work in different places, that is, in different oil wells, we also had Passierschein, which was issued by the oil industry, signed by Beitz, I mentioned before, who was the director of the oil industry, and that gave us the permission to move outside the ghetto, outside the Jewish quarter.
So also at that time the ghetto was established?
After the fifth action, the ghetto was established. Again, the conditions in ghetto were poor because there was no food, no sanitation, no...